This is Pocket Watching with JT, the call-in financial talk show focused on helping you get your money right. Jason Thornton is a certified financial planner licensed in both tax and investments. Now, this is not personal financial advice. This is JT's real reaction to all your money and business questions. Are you deep in debt, living paycheck to paycheck, and looking for a way out? Call Pocket Watching with JT, the financial advisor for the people. Need more? Book your personal consultation with my man JT at pocketwatcher.net. Now, let's go pocket watching.
Hey, Pocket Watchers, welcome to Pocket Watching with JT. I am certified financial planner Jason Thornton. I am an actual financial advisor. I do not just play one on YouTube. I have a whole office and everything with clients, the whole deal, licensed, all that stuff. You know, I specialize in tax and wealth planning for my clients, but on YouTube, I react to your money questions and scammer news. Listen, big week this week. I just want to give a big shout out to all of you who have been supporting my content. I appreciate it. Over the past 6 days, we've had over 2,000 new subs. Thank you so much. We are so close to our goal of 100,000 Pocket Watches. I appreciate it. We're over, I think, 97. So we have less than 3,000 subscribers to go. So do me a favor, hit the like button, share this content, subscribe if you have not already. All right? I appreciate it. Now, let's get into it. Let's get straight into it. What are we talking about tonight? Well, tonight, I get to go back to a story that really made my channel pop in the early days, because I was one of the first people giving you these stories of the PPP loan frauds. Listen, I love it. These stories are hilarious, and they are a lesson in why not to be a criminal. But let's take a look at this. Now, I've done so many of these videos. It's like coming back to a family reunion, right? Getting back to see old familiar faces you haven't seen in a while and cracking jokes, right? That's what we're going to be doing tonight, because I'm telling you, this PPP loan story is not going away. We are going to have these stories pop up from time to time for the next probably 15 to 20 years. Now, let's take a look at this. For those of you who are unaware, for those of you who maybe you weren't on LLC Twitter, maybe you weren't in, you know, hustle, grind, scammer culture, social media, you're unfamiliar of exactly what the PPP loan was. I know you heard of a PPP loan, but maybe you're a little confused on exactly what a PPP loan was. So let's review this together just for a second. Let's review this together. Now, the PPP loan was the Paycheck Protection Program. All right. This was a program that kicked in during the COVID-19 crisis. This was supposed to be an incentive for small businesses to keep people on payroll. All right. This was a forgivable loan. They were given small businesses, people were who applied for this loan. They were given a certain amount of money based on their application so that they can keep people on payroll during the shutdowns. And this was the government's way of trying to help people during a time of crisis. Good idea, bad execution, right? Bad execution. But we'll get into why it was bad execution in a moment. Let's take a look at this. Now, how much money could someone get if they applied for the PPP loan? Well, they based it on how much money you claimed you normally paid out for your employees, for your payroll. It was a simple formula. You take a look of how much money a month you normally spent on payroll. You multiplied it by 2.5. That's 2.5, right? 2.5. So whatever the normal amount that you pay for payroll, you would get 2.5 of that amount to pay your employees. And if you actually use the money for what you claimed you were going to use the money for, the government would forgive the loan. It's like a win-win. Everybody wins. The employees get money. The employer gets to save on actually paying out of their own pocket, their own employees. And the government gets to help people in a time of crisis in a way where they don't have to be on unemployment and all these other things. So, you know, it looked like it was going to be a win-win for everybody. So the question that you should be asking, is this: how were people able to apply for the PPP loan, right? How were they able to apply, right? If we're trying to stop fraud or try to make sure that the bad guys don't get the government's money, shouldn't there be some kind of process where they have to verify the loan information, right? That would make sense. Now, the federal government's idea was this: we'll have people submit their old payroll information, all right? Now, for those of you who do not own a business and you're a little confused of how companies report how much money they pay to their employees, I'll show you right now, okay? This is how companies normally show the government and report to the government how much money they pay their employees, right? These are quarterly tax returns for payroll. That means every 3 months, a business who has W-2 employees, that business has to fill out this form and submit it to the federal government. And there's also 941s for state governments who also have income tax, right? 941, you'd fill this out. And this would also show how much money that you would have to pay. And they would use that, hey, okay, this is the information, we got it. Now, what if you do not have W-2 employees? What if you're a small business and you do not have W-2 employees, you're just employed yourself? How could you apply? Well, the federal government had an answer for that as well. The federal government said, hey, listen, this is what you can do. You can submit your annual tax return form, which is the Schedule C with your 1040. It shows how much revenue came in, it shows all your expenses, and it shows how much money you actually made at the end of the day. So people who had W-2 employees could fill out the 941 tax form, and people who have a small business but you don't have W-2 employees, you know, you just have the money that you make off your business, you could submit this form right here, the 1040. Now, here's the issue. During COVID-19, things were crazy, right? Things were crazy. And most small businesses, while they're good at running their business, most of them are not good at paperwork. Trust me, coming from an actual financial advisor, I can tell you, many of my small business clients, they are great at what they do, right? If they are a lawyer, if they are a barber, whatever they do, they're really good at the product or the service that they provide. They're not too good at paperwork. And the federal government understood this. So they really made it easy to submit these documents. And sometimes they even did it on the honor system, saying, hey, just give us the numbers and we'll verify the documents after. Okay? I know what you're thinking. Well, if the government made it really easy to submit documents to them to get approved for these loans, then there could be a whole lot of fraud. I mean, if people can do this, I mean, there's some really good scammers out there who know how to manipulate numbers on the screen and they can fill out forms. Absolutely, that is true. Here's the thing that I want to focus on tonight. I'm well aware that with any program, there's going to be a certain level of fraud, right? There are professional scammers in this world who look out all the time for opportunities to scam. I got that. Here's the problem with the PPP loan stuff. Many, 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 many people who committed PPP loan fraud, they were not professional scammers. Many of these people never had an interaction with the law enforcement departments where they live. These are honest people, people who never scammed before. All of a sudden, now they're doing PPP loan fraud. How could this be? Let's think about this for a second. How could normal, honest, non-criminal people who have lived their entire life, we're talking about people who are 35, 45, we've got some young kids out there, but you know, some of these people, 42, 36, 50 years old, they worked for the post office, they had good jobs. How did they get caught up in this web of lies and deceit and find themselves trying to scam the federal government? Where would they get the skills to do this if they've never done it before? Well, don't worry. I believe I have the answer, because there were many, 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 many fake gurus online who were providing their skills of how to scam. And case in point, we have Bandman Kevel. Now, Bandman Kevel, as you can see, is a self-admitted scammer. Self-admitted scammer. And people like Bandman Kevel, I believe, in my opinion, saw an opportunity to scale their ability and knowledge to scam. They have these large platforms. They're interviewed at the various podcasts and stuff like that. They have your ears and your eyes because they're all over the internet in our sector, right? And they were able to provide people who normally would not be scammers. They would normally not be in a situation where they're trying to defraud the federal government. They were able to teach how to do it. Now, many of you are saying, oh, come on, JT. Come on, JT. We know you hate the fake gurus. But for you to make the claim that some of these guys and girls were going online and not just teaching people how to scam the federal government, they were actually charging for the opportunity to learn how to scam the federal government. Listen, I know it sounds crazy, but luckily I have receipts. I have receipts. So I want you guys to check this out real quick, and I will be right back.
$20,833. This is what. So to get you qualified for the $20,833, this is what they're putting on the 1040C. So listen, I'm going to actually give y'all a template to fill out and a blank template to fill in. Listen, I'm not a financial advisor. Remember, I'm just putting y'all on game. I'm letting y'all know things that's going on in the world. For the PPP, some people are doing it for themselves and some people are doing it as a side hustle. So listen, on this part, only fill out line 1, line 3, line 5, and line 7. In line 29, you see we under 100,000. And on line 28, the total expenses is 11,500. In line 31, you write the same thing in line 29.
Don't you listen to these funky ass niggas tell you shit!
All right, now, just to be clear, I want you to understand what you just witnessed. You saw a man who is a self-admitted scammer not only explain how you can get the maximum amount of PPP loan money, right? Not just explain, he showed you the forms. He actually gave you the numbers of what to put on the form. And allegedly in his OnlyFans, because apparently Batman Kevo has a very large following on OnlyFans. On his OnlyFans subscription, I believe they said that you could download the forms, plug the numbers in, and submit it for your PPP loan. See, I believe that's how the everyday person got swept up into scamming the federal government, because they normally would not have even attempted it. But when you have people telling them there's money out there, there's easy money out there, all you have to do is fill out these forms. I'm going to show you how to fill out the forms. I'm going to give you the numbers of how you get the maximum amount of money from the federal government. Then it's not too hard to understand that, yes, many everyday people, not just scammers, but many everyday people ended up scamming the federal government for that PPP loan. Now, I should not have to explain to you why you should not scam the federal government. I shouldn't have to do that. I shouldn't have to go on a long explanation of all the problems that can come into your life if you try to commit fraud against the federal government. I shouldn't have to do that. But this is Pocket Watching with JT, and clearly we're going to be a little bit petty. So I'm not going to explain all the bad things that could happen to you if you scam the federal government. I have a friend of the show, Walter from Debt Free Dad. He is going to explain to you guys all the bad stuff that can happen if you try to scam the federal government.
Hey, yo, I've been in the I'm Marcus, the debt-free dad. Yo, I've been in the criminal defense litigation investigation arena for 13 years now. Your boy getting old with gray hairs and everything. Ish, I would charge somebody with if they committed PPP fraud, making a false statement to the Small Business Administration. You're looking at a $1 million fine and up to 30 years in prison, submitting a false statement to a federally insured financial institution. It imposes the exact same penalties, up to $1 million fine, 30 years imprisonment for submitting a false statement to a financial institution. An individual could face charges regardless of whether or not they are accused of submitting false information directly to the SBA. Because financial institutions are involved in the processing, it could be the exact same paperwork that will make you susceptible to getting both charges on your indictment. Now we're getting to the good stuff. One of the original OG white collar crimes that's been on my desk forever. If you knowingly execute or attempt to execute a scheme to defraud a financial institution or to obtain monies under the custody or control of a financial institution, guess what you're looking at? Y'all can already know. What is the maximum penalty? Y'all got it. Y'all shot. $1 million fine, 30 years of imprisonment. Next up on the list is an oldie but goodie. And I tell you, hey, prosecutors, federal investigators, we love wire and mail fraud because it has a unique extended statute of limitation period that allows us to kind of reach back and get conduct that would have normally been outside of the statute of limitations. But wire fraud gives us a little flexibility to stretch that statute of limitation now. If you use any fraudulent activity or conduct to finesse somebody out of money, to run a play, as the gurus like to say, to run a play, and you use the internet to do so. The federal bank that distributes the funds are located in New York. When you get those funds deposited to your bank, it goes from New York, from that financial institution, to your bank account. Hey, once it hits that router, that internet bandwidth is traveling through the internet, it's a wrap. Most times the applications are electronic, so that's another way that you can have them on a hook. So you can be charged for wire fraud for filling out the application and submitting it, and you can be charged with wire fraud when those funds are transferred as well, depending on how the prosecutor wants to charge. And you're looking at a maximum of up to 20 years in prison with a $500,000 fine. And I know, hey, the Pocket Watcher, JT, I know you'll appreciate this one. Tax evasion. Now, I'm actually going to read this specifically because this is really interesting. Claiming deductions for expenses paid with PPP loan funds can lead to federal tax evasion charges as well. Federal tax evasion carries with it a fine of up to $100,000 for individuals and up to 5 years in federal imprisonment. I hope that made sense to y'all so y'all can wrap y'all mind around it and y'all can tell all y'all friends who may be asking these questions or calling into JT saying, I have a friend who's in this situation. This is the stuff you could potentially look for on your indictment.
All right. So as you can see, this is not petty things, right? We're not talking about a slap on the wrist. We're talking about big time fines and long prison sentences. Now, and of course, a lot of these smaller PPP loan scammers, they will most likely work out some sort of deal. It's probably going to be based on their prior history, right? If they have some sort of clean record, they probably won't do a whole lot of time. But why even risk it? Why risk your entire life over scamming the federal government? What is the point? Let me share my beliefs real quick. I personally believe, based on all the information that I had before me, that there are so many people who are living on the edge. Paycheck to paycheck, big debt. You're looking for any type of shortcut to fix your financial life. And I get it. I understand it. Listen, the Pocket Watcher has not always been the most financially responsible person. I was a kid one time too, right? But if you are looking for a shortcut that is also criminal, you are compounding your problem, right? You are going to put yourself in a situation where not only are you going to still be in some sort of financial hardship, you are now going to limit your opportunities in life because you could end up a convicted felon, okay? Now, I want to show you guys what happened in Broward County, Florida, all right? This is what apparently was going down in Broward County, Florida.
Tony, after 17 deputies have been arrested and charged with fraud, Local 10's Roy Ramos is live with this developing story. Roy.
Nicole, and we have learned that nearly 100 BSO employees did apply for the PPP loans. And of the 100, 17 of them are now facing federal charges. Well, as you mentioned today, we did get a chance to speak with Broward Sheriff Gregory Tony about these allegations. And he says if his employees were involved in this type of criminal activity, they do not deserve to be working in the law enforcement profession.
Did you believe you were receiving these loans legitimately?
17 members of the Broward Sheriff's Office, which include both BSO deputies and detention deputies, released from the federal courthouse in Fort Lauderdale after being indicted on charges that include wire fraud after federal investigators said they fraudulently applied for and received funds from the Paycheck Protection Program, or PPP loans.
Bonds were set. They're being released. Nobody, as far as I know, is being detained. And we'll take it from there. We'll be back in court.
Attorney Brian Silber represents three of the defendants, some of whom have either been suspended or placed on leave pending the outcome of the investigation.
I can't comment on the nature of the case.
While the charging documents do not allege that any of the defendants committed the charge offenses in the course of their official duties, this does not in any way diminish the seriousness of what the defendants are alleged to have done here.
Sheriff Gregory Tony said he first learned of the crimes in November of 2021, prompting him to investigate all 5,500 of his employees, including himself and other top brass. Of the 17 indicted, 7 BSO deputies and 1 sergeant in law enforcement, and 8 detention deputies and 1 sergeant in corrections.
I hate to see that, knowing some of the individuals and seeing the names on that list that's being indicted, some of them were good officers. But you're only as good as the last act and conduct that you execute.
We learned the defendants involved received tens of thousands of dollars, and while the investigation has proved that some of whom were investigated did have legitimate businesses, at the very least, the 17 now facing federal charges allegedly did not.
If you're going to be participating in criminal activities, we don't want you in this profession.
And while 17 BSO employees have been indicted, we are told that this investigation does continue and there could be more indictments to come. We'll be sure to stay on top of this. For now, outside of BSO headquarters near Fort Lauderdale, Roy Ramos, Local 10 News.
All right. So as you can see, they were doing that investigation. I believe they said it started back in 2021, right? Here we are in 2023. They were looking into it. They said about 100 people within that department actually filed for it. And out of that 100, they were able to bring charges against 17 of these deputy sheriffs and whatnot. Just imagine having a clean record. The sheriff of Broward County basically said he looked at the list of these names and he was shocked because he knew these guys and girls. Some of these guys and girls were really good officers. And it looks as if they threw their entire life away for what? To scam the government for some money that honestly, at the end of the day, it could not be worth it. It couldn't be worth it. And you know what? I'm going to show you guys how I know it was not worth it. How do I know it's not worth it? Well, I'm able to pull up how much money these guys and girls actually got from the program. How am I able to show you? It's because the PPP loans are public record. Let me be clear here. I mean, some of y'all don't understand what I'm saying. These clowns committed fraud in such a ridiculous way that any child with a smartphone can look up and see how much money they got, right? I can pull anyone's PPP loan records, anyone, even some of your favorite online fake gurus. I know what they got on a PPP loan, right? Let me show you. Some of y'all may think I'm playing. I can show you some of the favorite online gurus' PPP loans. So let's take a look at this. How about your boy, Jay Morrison? Yes, Jay Morrison, of course. Of course Jay Morrison would get a PPP loan. How much money did he get? According to the federal government, he got $68,970. Public record. We can see who got a PPP loan. I'm not done. Who's another one of your favorite online financial literacy guru? Oh, here we go. We got Billy Carson. Yeah, Billy. Billy, you know, the guy who, you know, talks about space aliens. He's also trying to help you get into crypto. But Billy Carson, he got $20,833. There you go. Billy Carson. Hopefully, he didn't put it all on crypto. All right. And also, I want to give a shout out to all the pocket watches out there. Apparently, I have people impersonating me, the pocket watcher. The pocket watcher. They're impersonating me on Instagram, trying to get people into crypto scams. Now, listen, if you're truly a supporter of Pocket Watching with JT, there's no way you should fall for this scam. But let me make it extremely public. Number one, I'm most likely not going to reach out to you via Instagram, right? Now, if you reach out to me, if it actually hits my inbox, I most likely will reply. But I'm most likely not reaching out to you first unless it's about some story that I'm investigating. That's a different thing. I absolutely will not reach out to you about investing any money. That's not even what I do in my own firm. I do not collect money from my clients and invest money for them. That's not what I do. I am a real financial advisor. I only get paid to give financial advice. I do not take people's money, then invest it for them. So I don't even do that with real money. I'm definitely not doing it with any type of cryptocurrency. As you should be aware, I'm not even a fan of crypto. So if there's fake bots out there on Instagram trying to get you to invest in crypto with this fake bot that has my profile picture, I don't understand how they can actually be successful with it, but public announcement, No, it's not me. I'm not trying to get you to invest in crypto. But shout out. Thank you for bringing that to my attention. But there's no way you guys should fall for that. None at all. Let's do one more. Who else got a PPP loan? Because it's public record. We can all see who got these PPP loans. Of course, we got the fellas from EYL. Yes, they too got the PPP loan, and they got $62,500. So as you can see, if you are scamming the federal government with these PPP loans, you're insane. Because any child with a smartphone can easily look up how much money you got. And if they know who you are, they know if you have a real business or not. So I'm going to bring up callers, but I want to show you a few of these Broward County Sheriff Department individuals who have fell for the trap, who ended up going down the wrong path, and now they are up on federal charges for PPP loan fraud. Let's take a look at it. So here we go. They bring up these different people. Here's one, Rory Brown. They say that on September the 14th, Rory Brown, who's 42 years old, not a child, 42 years old. On September the 14th, Rory Brown, 42, of Florida, was charged by indictment with two counts of wire fraud, okay? According to the indictment, Brown applied for and received one PPP loan on behalf of himself as a sole proprietor based upon materially false information about the borrower's total gross business income for the year 2020, as well as a falsified IRS tax form. Remember the form that Bandman Kevel was teaching people how to fill out? That's the tax form that we're talking about. That's it. See how the puzzle pieces come together, okay? As well as a falsified IRS tax form submitted with his application. Don't follow these fake gurus down the path to imprisonment and criminality. Stop it, okay? Now, you should be asking the question, well, okay, Mr. Brown, how much money did you actually get to risk your entire career, to risk, you know, going to jail? I mean, how much money did he actually get? Well, according to the PPP loan records, Rory Brown got an amazing $19,790. Not even $20,000. Is your life, reputation, is that worth $19,790? I personally do not think so. But, you know, maybe I'm wrong. And like I said, I'll be bringing up callers very, very soon. There is a link in the chat. Hit the link in the chat. I'll take some callers and we'll wrap the show up. But I want to hear from you. Is it worth it? Was it worth it? How much money would you take from the PPP loan to risk your entire life? I want to know. For me, the dollar amount is zero, but I'm a different breed. All right, let's go one more. We got one more here. According to the government, there is Keshandra Davis, right? Keshandra Davis on September 28th. Keshandra Davis, 37, not a child, 37 of Florida, was charged by indictment with one count of wire fraud. According to the indictment, Davis applied for and received a PPP loan based upon materially false information about the borrower's gross income for the year 2019 and purpose for the loan, as well as a falsified IRS tax form submitted with her application. Once again, got people like Bandman Kevo teaching you how to fill out the forms to get the PPP loan. This is where you end up. How much money did Ms. Davis get to risk it all? Any guesses out there? What do you guys think? Was it $1 million? Was it $500,000? Was it $250,000? How much money did she risk her whole life for? Let's take a look. According to the PPP loan records, $18,332. I mean, it's funny, but then it's also not funny, right? It's really tragic to risk everything for less than $20,000. Like, I don't think you should be risking everything for any type of crime. Let's be clear there. But $18,000, the job that she just lost, because I'm sure she's fired by now. The job that she lost, the benefits that she probably would have had, because she probably would have had some sort of pension, stuff like that. All of that is gone. And if she gets a felony on her record, she will probably never be able to get a similar job. She'll never be able to get a job in the banking or finance areas. Like, just think about all the things that you lose trying to get a few dollars. All right, there we have it. Now, listen, I'm going to start bringing up callers. There is a link in the chat, pinned to the top of the chat. There is a link. I'm going to start bringing up callers. You can hit the link. Don't worry about camming up because nobody's going to see you. It's just going to be you and me. So after I run this quick commercial, I'll be right back and we'll start to take on callers.
Hey, Pocket Watchers, are you looking for real financial advice? Thornton Advisor Group is here to help. Jason Thornton, certified financial planner, specializes in tax and wealth planning. Are you living paycheck to paycheck with no retirement plan? Do you need help with the IRS? Book your consultation with Thornton Advisor Group to get a financial plan, budgeting, savings, debt management, tax planning, investing, and retirement, even IRS debt settlements. Stop trying to run the play. Get the advice you need to live your best life from a certified financial planner. Book your consultation appointment today. Go to www.thorntonadvisor.com.
All right, all right. We are bringing up callers. I got Kay Journey in the building. I'm about to bring her up. But let me read some of these super chats real quick. We have Lamar. Shout out to Lamar. Says, the llama. I'm the llama and you're the goat. Keep it up, JT. Listen, Lamar, I appreciate it 100%. We are this close to 100,000 subscribers in about 2.5 years on YouTube. Thank you guys so much. I'm not trying to teach y'all to run a play. I'm not trying to sell any type of lifestyle. I'm teaching you how to do the hard work to actually be financially stable. It's not sexy. It's not cool, but it will actually lead you to live a better life. That's it. That's what we do here. Thank you. I appreciate it. Hey, we got Felicia, a new sub to Pocket Watching with JT. Thank you so much. I appreciate your support, Felicia. We have Kim K in the building. Thank you so much, Kim K. She says, saw you with the lead attorney last night. Thank you so much. If you guys are not subscribed to Lead Attorney, I don't know what you're doing. Go subscribe to Lead Attorney. It says, thanks for always providing valuable information. Listen, I appreciate that, but I don't always provide valuable information. It's about, I want to say, 75% pettiness, 25% good financial information. You just got to, you know, understand the difference between the two. That's all. I do the best I can to give you good information. You just got to kind of weed through the pettiness a little bit. And we also have Darnell, thank you so much. Says, new member to your channel. I really appreciate your pettiness. See, Darnell gets it. Darnell understands. I appreciate your pettiness because it nourished my soul. Salute, JT. No, thank you, Darnell. I appreciate it. All right, here we go. I'm going to bring up callers. So here we go. We have Kay Journey in the building. Thanks for calling. What's going on?
Nothing much. Again, I appreciate your channel. Thank you to your wife for lending you out and encouraging you to start your channel. But JT, mm-hmm. the level of stupidity gets worse right? Because a lot of these programs that came about because of the panorama that we shall not name, people are taking it a step further. And I haven't heard you talk about it yet, but the ERTC.
Oh.
So now the fraudsters are encouraging people to do the ERTC, right? So a lot people who use CPAs for their payroll, they're pretty much good. But what they're doing is they're going after major corporations. They're telling you how to get a free payroll service and how to defraud these payroll companies for the ERTC. Well, let me tell you where you messed up. These large payroll companies have relationships with the IRS, right? So as they catch certain things, the IRS is catching certain things, and they're having pillow talk with each other like, hey, something ain't right here. You're messing up even more, because how are you trying to get an employee retention credit for a company you don't have? But then I noticed what they're doing now. You remember how people would, like I'm a millennial, would say, yeah, my mama messed up my credit. Like people's parents were using their credit. Well, now what they're doing is they're using their kids' information as if their child was the essential employee. So your daughter that's graduating high school, that's in college, you're using these kids as essential personnel, right? They see mommy flex and they think their mommy has a legitimate business. They may not even know, but you're running that, I'm gonna run my kids' credit up because they're just children. It'll go away when they're old enough. You're running that play with the ERTC. Do you think these major corporations are going to allow you to get away with that? Do you think they're going to go bankrupt for you to get away with that? Every time you guys try to amp it up, there's certain QA processes that are put in place with that company and then the pillow talk with their wife, the IRS. So you guys are trying to flip it and reverse it, putting out TikTok videos. Oh, you can qualify for the ERTC. An Insta store is not, that's not essential personnel.
Oh, my God. All right, so that. For those of you who are unaware of what we're talking about here, we're talking about the employee retention tax credit. This was a tax credit for people who had employees, right? Payroll employees, and it would pay a portion of the payroll tax that businesses pay. Because most people don't realize this. If you have a W-2 job, and if you actually look at your paycheck, I know most of you don't look at your paycheck because you probably get a direct deposit. But back in the old days, when you actually had a physical paycheck, you would actually have to go, cash a check and whatnot. But you would look at all the things that they took out of your check, right? You'd see federal income tax, you'll see Social Security, Medicare, you'll see state income tax, stuff like that. Well, what you don't realize is your company, the company that you work for, they actually pay a portion of your Social Security. Right. And your Medicare, they pay a portion of that with the 941 tax returns that I was talking about earlier. Well, with the employee retention tax credit, the government was giving the employers a credit to pay some of those payroll taxes. I believe the maximum you could get was like $10,000 per employee, but it depends on how much you said that you paid your employee. I've had some clients who own like these in-home healthcare companies that have like a bunch of employees. I've had some clients that got like $250,000 worth of ERC tax credit, but they actually do pay that much in payroll taxes, and they got the tax credit back and they had to amend the older returns because a lot of this stuff was actually retroactive. So for people who don't get it, you paid payroll taxes during COVID. Then the government came out and said, you know what? We're going to give you a tax credit because we want to incentivize you to keep people employed on your payroll. Mm-hmm. So yes, moving forward, you would get the tax credit, but you can also go back and amend your old 941s, which is a 941X. And you can say, no, let me get that tax credit, which would actually give you a refund. Because if you were doing it proactively, you wouldn't get money. You would basically just be saving money that you didn't have to pay because the government stepped in and paid it for you with the credit. But with the amended returns, that would mean you already paid more in the payroll tax than you should have. You apply for the credit retroactively and you get money back. And you're telling me there are people who don't have businesses who are applying for a tax credit from employees that they didn't have and they never even paid the payroll tax in the first place.
That is correct. And if you just Google different payroll companies and you Google payroll companies, ERTC or ERC, mm-hmm. you're going to see these payroll companies are incentivizing new businesses. They're competing. They're giving you free 3 months free payroll, all this other stuff. People mm-hmm. are taking this information. They're going over to TikTok, especially when it first came out and they were able to get away with it. They're taking that information and they're recycling it and they're giving it to people. And I'm just sitting there like, nope, I can't say anything. I can't say anything because it's not my will. I can't for the security of my job. But right. I'm just like, you guys have no idea what's going on in the background. So not only are you going to have the PPP thing, you think you're going to use the ERTC to pay off the PPP. No, you're adding more charges. It's more like, and JT has been on here shouting from the rooftops, don't do it. And you thought you found a workaround? You thought you found something else? But and not only are you losing, like you said, with the young lady in Broward County, you're losing mm-hmm. opportunities to have opportunity. You're losing opportunities, period, yeah. by having that jacket, right? Yeah. So not only are you doing that, but you're literally hurting the economy. The same economy you want to complain about, people not hiring, people discriminating. You're hurting all that, too, because you're playing into that. Like, you're putting people in the bad spot. But I'm going to let you know right now, these companies – these are the big bad wolves. You're messing with the wolves of corporate America. You think they don't have the lawyers on speed dial? Again, there's a relationship that's happening, and there's pillow talk that's happening between the IRS mm-hmm. and these companies. And these companies talk to each other as well.
Yeah.
So it's like, you guys can't be this stupid. Like, really?
Never.
Like, really?
I've learned over my 2.5 years on YouTube. Never underestimate the stupidity of an individual. Like, it's just never do it because you will be disappointed every
time. And the craziest part about it, JT, is that people think dissolving this business that they created or this tax ID number they never used before, but they're using it now all of a sudden. They think that's going to resolve it. That's not going to solve your issue, baby. It's not going to work.
And let me give a little insight on that, because some people, once again, you're listening to these fake gurus who don't understand what's going on. So mm-hmm. there are certain things that the IRS are going to consider a trust fund situation, not the mm-hmm. type of trust fund that most of you are thinking about. So let me give mm-hmm. you an example. So when you deal with payroll taxes, like the federal and state taxes that you withhold from an employee's check. When they take that money out your check, it does not automatically go to the mm-hmm. IRS or to the mm-hmm. state. It kind of sits in an account for the business. Once again, those 941 tax returns are filed quarterly. That means every mm-hmm. 3 months. So some business owners think that they're savvy and smart. They leverage the fact that they don't have to pay the employee's taxes to the government for 3 months. Mm-hmm. So in that 3 months, they say, well, let me use that money to buy inventory. Let me mm-hmm. use that money to do this or do that. And then when the time comes that I have to file the 941, I'll have the money back. That doesn't mm-hmm. happen all the time. Sometimes mm-hmm. the 941s come up and they did not make enough money back to pay the taxes that they withheld and they were supposed to remit to the government on the behalf of the employee. I've had to represent clients before the IRS who have owed hundreds of thousands of dollars mm-hmm. to the government because they did not give the employees money to the government. Now, they dissolved the company. They got rid of the company's been dead. They mm-hmm. assumed if they just got rid of the company, the tax liability will go with the company. No. That's not how it works, because that was not the tax of the company that was right. owed. It was the money that you were entrusted to act mm-hmm. as almost a middleman between your employee and the federal government. You are taking your employee's money and giving it to the government for them. And what happens in that situation, when your employee goes to file their tax return and they have a W-2 that shows my employer took out $3,000 for federal income tax. The federal government knows, well, that money never came to us. But mm-hmm. what the federal government will do, they'll say, you know what? We're still going to honor the fact that someone took out $3,000 and they said that they gave it to us. So we're still, you're not going to owe money. If you get a refund, you still get your refund. But that debt, that $3,000 falls on the business. And they also attach it to the people within the business who had the responsibility of remitting the money. And it goes to them individually. So even when the company goes away, the debt still stays with the individual person within that company who was most responsible of remitting the money from the employee to the government. And they call that like a trust type of account that you can't simply run away from just because the business is no longer here. And we're still talking about a similar thing with this ERC. That is a 941 type of tax credit thing. So thanks for calling in. I wasn't even thinking about that. I see these ERC companies pop up, but I paid them no mind because I figure people, you don't compound fraud with more fraud. But once again, you can't underestimate the stupidity of people.
Yep. And the last thing I'm going to say before I go, JT, you guys, you realize that you fill out a contract when you go to these companies, right? So if you did it, you better go back and read those contracts you signed, baby, because you know you're compounding the fraud. JT, I appreciate you. The audience, I love you guys. And you guys keep pouring in. Let's get them up there, man. Thank you, JT.
Bye. Thank you so much. I appreciate you. Have a good one, all right? All right, here we go. We got a couple more callers, then we're going to wrap it up because I want to get to bed. We have Jacob, one of our moderators. Jacob's in the building. We have the lead investor. We have someone that just says super chat. So maybe you gave a super chat and that's you. And then we got Polo Bandit. So let me get Jacob, one of our moderators here on Pocket Watching with JT. What's going on, Jacob?
Can you hear me?
Yes, sir. Go right ahead.
Those 17 people didn't learn their lesson from the 15 inmates from AL under EEE known.
So for those who are unaware, great question, Jacob. I don't think people quite get how hilarious this question is, but let me explain what you're talking about. So I did a show earlier, months ago, maybe even a year ago now, I can't quite remember. But I did a show where they had, I believe, 15, as Jacob said, 15 inmates actually applied for and received a PPP loan while they were incarcerated. And then I believe they were able to use the money from the PPP loan to bail themselves out. And of course, they got caught. Of course they did. But that shows you how crazy the system was during that time. People who are currently incarcerated and in the PPP loans and all those documentations, you are barred from being able to get it if you were a felon or whatever. But it just shows you how crazy it was. So we had 15 prison inmates who got a PPP loan and got caught. Now we have, and thanks to Jacob for tying this together, now we have 17 sheriff deputies who got caught doing the same crime. Isn't that crazy? You have both ends of the spectrum. You've got 15 prison inmates doing the PPP loan scam. Now we have 17 sheriff deputies, I believe, doing the PPP loan scam. Shouts out to Jacob. Thank you so much. He is a moderator here on Pocket Watching with JT. All right, let me bring up the lead investor. Oh, hold on. He just went away. So let me now switch it to Polo. Polo, what's going on?
How you doing, JT?
I'm doing good, man.
All right. Shout out to you, Eli, and the closer.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Basically, it's crazy how this PPE thing is going on, man. I even 2 weeks ago, somebody tried to hit me up with that, you know, because I have a small home business. Uh-huh. And they were like, oh, you qualify this? And I said, listen, it's a one-man show. And I don't I can't play stuff like that.
You ain't got payroll like that.
Yeah, I don't got payroll like that. Secondly, you guys, your little squad with Eli and the closer, you guys should get a reward for all this nonsense that you guys are, you know, making. You know, seriously, the feds need to hire you guys and put you guys as the lead detectives, man. because this thing is insane.
It's a wild story. I will say Tony the Closer Robinson and Eli from What Happened to Common Sense, they absolutely, I think they should actually be in the running for like a journalism award, like a Pulitzer award or something like that, because the work that they did in gathering this information and basically gift wrapped it and gave it to the authorities and gave it to journalists like the NBC team in New York, they deserve some sort of whistleblower slash journalistic award for the work that they did, especially when you add in the fact of the personal attacks that they received while just trying to expose what the federal government is saying, a major Ponzi scheme. So, Polo, I appreciate you calling in, man. Thank you so much. I'm going to wrap this thing up. I got the lead investor coming back, and then I got Super Chat. So let me bring in the lead investor. What's going on?
What's going on, JT?
Yes, sir. Thanks for calling, man. What do you think about these PPP loan scammers, these sheriff deputy PPP loan scammers?
You know what's so funny? The funniest thing is how you said you can't underestimate stupidity. So this just goes back to show you that we are so greedy after money, we will risk, some of us will risk our freedom knowing we're going to get caught at some point, because like you said, this is federal, man. Yeah. It's just like you said, you would think people have enough common sense to say, nah, man, I can't do this, man. I'm going to get caught. But I guess we have that thing's like, hey, man, I'm going to live it up for now, and I'll pay the piper later. You know what I mean? So that's really sad, man. It's really sad.
I mean, look at this, man. We're talking about a grown woman. This woman is, what, 37 years old. She probably had a promising career with this sheriff's department. She probably could have ended up retiring from this place, had a pension, all that stuff. And she risked it all. And it seems as if she has lost it all over how much money? We're talking about $18,000. Who would do that?
Now, what you, JT, what you call that, jumping over a 20 to get to a 5?
Yeah, right. Stepping over dollars to pick up pennies, as they say, right? It's like, it's insane. Yeah. It's insane. But once again, as I always will do, I'm going to blame scammer culture. I'm going blame the fact that we have a culture of people who think it's cool to get over, to get the greatest reward for the little amount of effort, right? If I can get all this stuff by doing this much, I'm winning. In reality, you're going to most likely end up either behind bars or just ruining your life. Like, even if these people get a slap on their wrist and all they get is like probation and a fine, but they are gonna have a criminal conviction, right? A felony on their record. There's a lot of doors that are going to be shut to them. There's a lot of things that they will no longer be able to do because of this. So it's not just a thing where, oh, okay, well, everybody was doing it. Well, good luck with that. If you are of the mindset of, hey, man, everybody was doing it, so they can't catch us all, give them time. That's all I got to say. Give the federal government time and they'll figure it out. Shouts out to I'm Just Me. Thank you so much for the super chat, as well as Tech Coach Ralph. We got two more callers and we're going to wrap this thing up. We've got a Super Chat. Let me bring up Super Chat. What's going on?
JT, how are you?
I'm doing good. Thanks for calling in. What's going on?
I just had to, for you, the woman caller, which was a wonderful caller, it leads to a conversation that I am hearing at the workplace. I work for a quite well-known company. I'm very blessed to be C-suite or in that circle. And what one of these executives said, and the breath of his voice the breath of his voice, he said, this is the most difficult, the most challenging regulatory environment I have ever experienced in the past 30 years of my career. He outright said that.
Really?
And the like his voice dropped. Like, that's why I just hearing her speak, it kind of just reminded me of that. It was a few weeks ago. It is difficult right now. The government is not effing around. What they are expecting these financial institutions to provide, moreover, they are expanding what is expected. It's simply not just turn in documentation when the government, whether it be a prudential regulatory body like the Treasury, or whether it be like these semi-regulators, these semi like namely like the SEC and even the FDIC, the OCC, and what the woman what mentioning the IRS, it's funny she said that because that is exactly what is happening right now. That is exactly, these lobbyists, they come back and what they share, she's very correct. They all know each other because remember they go in and out. They go into private business. They go back into regular.
Back and forth, right.
Back and forth, just like Aaliyah said. All day, every day. They all know each other. They're friends. Many of them, remember, when we were born, you're a millennial and she mentioned she's a millennial too. When the time we were born, I'm sure, you don't remember the savings and loans. That was in the 80s.
Right. I don't remember experiencing it. Remember being a student in business school, we had to study it.
Exactly. You study them. They tell us. The teacher lets us know. And you're like, wow, this happened in the 80s. Right. When you were enjoying formula and in a diaper. This same situation that Envy, who needs to know his place and stop chasing waterfalls, which is what you said the other night. Just spin that record, DJ. Waterfalls, stick to the rivers and the lakes that you're used to.
Right.
DJ, stick to what you know. If you think about it, this whole real estate scam, they did this back in the 80s with the savings and loans. Remember what several weeks ago, somebody called in and they said that many of these, you know, like these BBC billionaire boys clubs, these scams they did in the 80s, a lot of men are now doing them now. These are all old ripoffs. That's what he mentioned to you. One of your callers called and he said that. These are old plays from the 80s that they're now kind of bringing back.
And but they dress them up in new language. They dress it up with crypto. They'll dress it up in an NFT, or they'll dress it up running a Turo play. It's the same scam, but they just update the language and the technology. And for those of us who didn't really experience it in the early 80s or whatnot, especially the people who were born in the late 90s and the 2000s, they think it's new. But all these scams are old. They just update it with new terminology and technology to make it sound fresh.
Absolutely. And to add on to what you said, when we're thinking the early 80s, mid 80s, the savings and loans, that's how Bank of America came about. Learning the lessons from back then when those banks fell into FDIC conservatorship. Everybody's coming together. Banks are consolidating. And eventually we go from like multiple banks from when we were babies to now as adults, because now we're grown. We have much fewer banks, more regulation. And those 80s kids, those boomers, those little baby billionaire boys clubs, they're now all old. They're grown. They're now, they've been in, this is that Jamie Dimon generation.
Right.
They know the play. They've already shared it amongst their friends. And now, my dad's an old banker from the 80s. I'm just kind of repeating, he remembers that. And now, the woman who called in, yourself, I believe you're a Power Ranger. You're a 90s kid. We're all now that age from when they were back in the 80s. We're seeing these plays dressed up, but we now have a whole generation who remembers. And we have much better technology. We now have analytics and a way that our parents did not have in the 80s. The ability to move data and to do analysis that did not exist then exists now. So we, and you know, we're the Microsoft Windows generation. We're able to move so much faster. We're able to pick up on these things. What was the savings and loans crisis in 1987, which destroyed banks, mm-hmm. is now in 2023, a DJ in his front from the Bronx.
Yeah, and cryptocurrency trading platforms and stuff like that. Yeah,
that's a whole new. And speaking about that, and I'll go ahead and wrap up. Mm-hmm. I actually reached out, and I specifically asked two executives define mm-hmm. to me what is just define crypto. Crypto is a security. It's security, right? He said mm-hmm. no, it does not fit the definition of what a security is. No, it is not. And it made me laugh because the other night, Mark Cuban, he stated mm-hmm. that there is components of crypto that is a security. And whatnot. But then sometimes it's also an option. And it's just like, these men cannot even give you an ontological definition of what crypto is. But yet we're supposed to jump into this. And on top of that, base this economy. It's, mm-hmm. we're moving out of financial engineering. You can see that right now, back in 2007, 2008, the largest companies were all banks and they were all involving themselves in securities, which mm-hmm. is financial shenanigans to an very, it is. And now our economy has moved to really strictly to transaction and supply chain and commerce, where now our economy is based off technology, ingenuity, real intellectual property, not securities, not financial shenanigans, not usury. Things have changed. And the government has learned its lesson from 08. Dodd-Frank has changed the game. You're not going to get away with this nonsense. Everything is reported. The government is doing serious analytics. They're putting pressure. Like, no, 50 Cent, Floyd, I will put that pressure on you. They're putting pressure. They're expecting every bank to know how to read the Harry Potter book. It's not like it was before. Have a great night, Jason. Bye.
Thank you so much. And I agree with so much of what you said. I will say this, though. Yes, the regulations have stepped up. And there is more tools that regulators have to verify information and try to detect fraud. But even behind all of that, there's always a person, right? If you cannot hack the system, then you can try to hack the person. And if you can hack the person, you can bypass the system. And when I say that, what I mean is there's still individual people at these accounting firms, in these big organizations, that if they do certain things, they can hide the fraud or they can disguise the fraud for so long. Eventually, they'll get caught. But they can do it for a long amount of time, enough so where it builds up a big enough bubble where even when they do get caught, most of us will feel the impact of that bubble popping. So I believe right now the economy is in a bubble. I believe real estate is overinflated. I believe the stock market, honestly, is overinflated. I believe that you, the person who's watching this right now, you need to make sure you're taking all the fundamental financial steps you need to do to prepare yourself for what I believe is going to be a significant downturn in the economy. You need to have a budget. You need to build up an emergency savings fund. You need to actively also work on trying to pay down debt so that you can have more money available in your budget. These are the things that you should be doing. Should you be taking on 5 credit cards so you can then liquidate the money off that credit card so that you can then do some Airbnb play or something? No, you need to be doing the corny, boring stuff that's going to protect you when the economy crashes. That's what you need to do. But listen, guys, I appreciate your support. We're so close to 100,000 subscribers for Corny Financial Advisors YouTube channel. So thank you. Hit the like button, share, subscribe if you haven't already. I'm going to hit you guys with 2 videos at the end. We're going to watch Mo Money Taxes, and we have to watch the most epic interview of pocket watching in the history of Cleveland, I believe. So first, more money taxes, then pocket watching at its height. So here we go.
Hi, I'm Mike Evans with More Money. Tell me, what do you know about More Money?
Brother, all I know is I was here last night getting my taxes done, and today there's more money all the way. You know what I'm saying?
And how about you?
In here yesterday, back today to get my check. This more money stuff is real. I'm more money for life.
Out of slow money? Well, come to more money, because we about that.
More money taxes, and once again, it's on, and I got the hookup.
More money taxes. Come down and see us, and you'll be glad that you did.
At Mo Money Taxes, you're more than just another number. This year, we're offering our 32nd refunds to go along with our next day refunds. Come down and see us, and you'll be glad that you did.
Continuing saga of Mo Money Taxes. Norfolk police are investigating the tax preparer, and they have alerted the IRS about customers' complaints.
Where's my check?
That's the question all of these people want answered.
The IRS is basically verifying to us that our money is here in their bank account.
Friday, crowds gathered at Mo Money Taxes in Norfolk. On Granby Street, owner Mario Brady told us he printed 50 checks and 30 did not clear.
The banks have refused to cash their checks, saying that there is fake. I mean, that is unacceptable.
Federal agents raided the headquarters of Mo Money Taxes in Tennessee this morning.
You may remember 10 on Your Side traveled to Memphis for local Mo Money customers who claimed they didn't receive their refund. We continue to follow another developing story. New tonight, tensions continue to run high as customers wait for their tax returns that they say were not getting from Mo Money Taxes. You can see the level of anger just a few hours ago at this Norfolk location off Brambleton. Angry customers who say they were promised refund checks and didn't get them broke windows, and police were called to break up the angry crowd.
That's just ridiculous.
Marcus Eves, a former customer who says he filed his taxes with Mo Money in 2007, is worried about what we recently uncovered behind this Mo Money Tax Services location on Elvis Presley.
This is wrong for, you know, files to be out here. This is people's personal information that anybody could have come by and gotten.
Investigators are now looking into the discovery of thousands of documents thrown into three dumpsters behind the facility. Shortly after authorities arrived on scene and put up crime scene tape, so did Marky Granberry with Mo Money Taxes.
Normally, we would have all files shredded shredded or whatever, but this, we don't throw files in the garbage can.
I asked him what happened and why the documents were not shredded.
Our lease was up on this operation, so I assume the landlord went inside of the location and for whatever reason he decided to throw the files in a dumpster.
You'll have some if I knew once. Give us a regular.
George, you got 1 second? Just want to ask you a question. We're doing a story on tax collecting overdue bills for the city. You notice the number of councilmen haven't paid their water or sewer bills yet.
Cash flow problem.
Is that why you haven't paid yours?
I didn't know it wasn't paid, but this...
Well, it's been about a year since you paid a water or a sewer bill. According to this, you're almost $500.
It's a long way from $2,000 owed at one time.
So you say you are paying off your bill?
No, I didn't say that.
But it says here you haven't paid your bill in a year.
That's what you said. I'm not aware of that. No big problem, you know. The city ain't gonna go bankrupt.
Well, don't you think it's a bad example to set?
No, I do not. I don't have the money.
You don't have money to pay a $400 water bill?
I do not have the money, okay? Did you hear me?
Well, in a time of austerity,
just a minute.
Don't you think it's set?
How much do you owe?
We owe $440.
I do not have the money.
You say you don't have money to pay your bill?
Did you hear me?
But your water's still on, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, should... Don't you think your water should be turned off if you're not paying your bill?
No, it should not be. You know, one of these days, you're going to corner me, and I'm going to kick your ass. Okay? And one of these days, you're going to corner me, and I'm going to kick your ass.
Well, don't you think that's a legitimate question, George? I mean, you're not the
and
only
counselor. You,
you're not the only
counselor. Wait a minute. I gave you an legitimate answer. You asked me about my water bill. What did I tell you?
Said you didn't have the money. But your water's still on, isn't it?
Now, that was my fucking answer to you.
But I don't think everybody has that luxury of having their water...
Tough shit. Okay, now, one of these days you're going to corner me and I'm going to kick your ass. Now, keep fucking with me, okay? Now, I'm telling you, keep fucking with me.
You're not the only one, George.
I'm not talking about anybody else but you.
Now, I gave you a goddamn answer.
And I asked you a follow-up question?
I gave you a fucking answer. Now, one of these days, I'm going to kick your fucking ass.
George.
And it might be this goddamn one. Now, you got your fucking answer. Now, get out of my goddamn face.
Thank you.
I ain't bullshitting with you. Now, I'll take that fucking camera and wrap it around your goddamn head. Now, one of these days, you're going to grab me the wrong fucking minute. Now, I gave you my fucking answer, okay?
Okay.
We got to meet.
Now, I ain't bullshitting with you.
We got to meet.
Now, you scared him, but I'll kick your goddamn ass, boy. I ain't bullshitting with you.
We got to meet.
Son of a bitch. Now, you hang around with me if you want. Now, you think I'm bullshitting with you?